Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Ed Staffel. I'm a dentist practicing here in San Antonio, and you're listening to the Dr. Staffel program, and your smile matters today on this beautiful Sunday afternoon, all that great rain we had. Oh, gee, last night, and it looked like it knocked a lot of pollen out, so that should help a lot of with the people that are suffering from pollen. And I want to remind you that we have a podcast. And the podcast, we have about 7 years archived. And you can go to staffelDDS.podomatic.com and listen to the podcast. You can look up by title. We have some real interesting guests and so on. And then, of course, there's the website, sanantoniodentist.net. And we're overworking that now, and it'll be, about 3 or 4 months. It's going to be really helpful, really valuable, because we like to inspire you a lot. We like to challenge you on listening. And we bring a lot of guests, and guests from medical doctors, chiropractors, dentists, nutritionists, a wide range of people, naturopaths, and wide range of programs, always with a focus on dental health and oral health and its tie into systemic health. Because there's no question that data just keeps pouring out. There's no question that there's a tremendous connection between oral health and systemic health. And that's one of the things that we really focus on and have been doing so for the 17 years that I've been doing this program. I think it's 17 or 18 years. So, again, we like to challenge you, we like to inspire you, we like to inform you and make sure you're getting information that's current and fresh. And also, a lot of times we give you information that you've never heard before and you wouldn't have a possibility to hear because a lot of these articles come out in technical magazines and they never make it to the mainstream because there's nobody pushing them because there's no pharmaceutical company or there's nobody making money off these particular items, and yet these things are very, very valuable, and I'll explain that in just a minute. Now, I do not have a guest, so please call in. The number is 599-5555 here at KTSA this beautiful Sunday afternoon. You can always reach us Sunday afternoon 4 to 5, and of course, this is, you can always call our office if you have a question, and the office number is Dr. Staffel and McLinn, and our number is 210-341-2569, and give me a call today if you have a question, if you have a comment, if you'd like more information on something that I've talked about in the past, or if you have a dental problem and you're trying to accumulate information, you're trying to be a fact finder and find as much information about a problem that you can, because your teeth are pretty doggone special. So give me a call. Lines are open. It's 210-599-5555. Give me a call. Be a part of the show. Let me hear from you. Last week, I talked about a whole bunch of things. And I want to go over some of them and zero in on some of these things that I talked about. Because I really threw a lot of information out there. And there's some things that I think are very, very important, and we'll start off with some. And that's another thing. I want to know, and you can call here. You can call the office, or you can call my office, Dr. Staffel and McLinn, at 210-341-2569. And here's a question. How many of you would be interested in taking a basic life support course? My team members all have to take a basic life support course every year so that we can administer CPR to any emergency and know how to call and get the fabulous 911 people in the office. We've been very fortunate through the years. We've only had one case in all the decades that I've been in practice where we had to call EMS. But I'll tell you, it sure is important that you do that, to be able to do that. And we train for that. We train all year. Then we take the course. But my question is, and I was talking to a friend of mine last week, and this person lives out in the country and entertains, has a lot of people coming through there, entertaining a lot of people. And I asked him, did you ever take a basic life support course? And he said, no. And I said, would you like to? He said, yes, really would. And also, because they're out in the country, I asked, did he have an AED, an automatic external defibrillator, which is now ruled, or the guidelines are, you want to get an AED, it's called, automatic external defibrillator, on a person as fast as you can. Used to, we would go through the, and of course we still do, find out if they're breathing, but emergency happens. If somebody is non-responsive, you find out if they're breathing, you find out if their heart is working or beating immediately, but you only have 10 seconds to that, and then you start your compressions, and then you need to get to an AED just as fast as you can. Now, wherever there is an AED, like at our office, we're required to post that sign out on the front of our entranceway so that people know if there's an emergency, there is an AED here. And you see them all over. And I noticed just in the Business Journal or the newspaper, they put it 230 of them in the Northeast Independent School District or Northside, I don't know which. And they recently saved a student's life who was practicing football, and he went into acute cardiac arrest, and they saved his life with the CPR and the AED. So my question is, how many people would really be interested in my putting together a course and having our instructor, who is a EMS person, he really knows his business, and he teaches us, every year. And you would not take it with us. It would be a separate course. I'm thinking they would put a separate course together. Now, there is a charge for it, and I think the last time he charged $39, and it's pretty much an all-day course, but it's really valuable, and I'll tell you about the value of something like that in just a minute. Let me go to the lines here and talk to Javier. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Wonderful. How may I help you?
Yeah, so I was just calling to get kind of a recommendation. So I haven't gone to the dentist in about 3 years.
Okay.
I used to go every 6 months when I was living at home. I'm 27 now.
Okay.
When I was living at home with my mom, she made me go religiously. Every 6 months I was going.
Your mother's a wise woman.
She was. Yeah, she is. She definitely is. She was really hard on me, which was a good thing.
Listen to your mother.
I hear you. Well, now she's been bugging me to find a dentist here in San Antonio. I'm originally from Uvalde, which
okay.
I had a dentist over there.
Okay.
But it was just kind of trying to get a recommendation. And I also
sure.
have a buddy who's a dentist assistant over at 7 and 7 or 7 on 7.
Okay.
I don't know what your recommendation is or how you feel about that place. But
well, I make a habit of being careful of what I say. And the concept of the 7 to 7 is really good because there are a lot of people can't take off from work. They don't want to take off work, and it's costly for them. And these people are open 7 days a week, including Sundays. And I only know of one person that works in there, and it's because it's different from a normal dental office, there's a lot of pressure on the dentist, and that's mainly what happens. So, but if you can find one that you're happy with, the convenience of the hours is terrific because you can imagine going Saturdays and Sundays and at 7 o'clock up to 7 o'clock at night or 7 in the morning. They've really made convenience of dental appointments terrific. And they one of the things that we run into is that in these corporate entities, and the corporates have taken over general dentistry pretty well. I've seen numbers showing that 90% of dental offices are affiliated with corporate offices, and the corporates are tied into Wall Street. They're tied into investors and hedge funds. And, of course, they put a lot of pressure on the dentist because they've got to make their numbers. And so these are some of the things that you run into, but you can find good people in those entities. And if you do and you find somebody that you like, I'd say stick with them, and especially if he's a friend of yours and he likes the corporate world. There's nothing wrong with that. So that's the way I feel about it. Now, I'm a private, I'm not in a dental service organization, they call it, or I'm not on any dental plans. We are fee for service. We file insurance, but we do not, we're not in any plans. And there's a reason for that, because we have a very, we cater to a lot of people who have high fear and high anxiety, and we have to treat them in a special way that doesn't fit very well into the corporate structure. And, you know, they've taken over dentistry. They're just like what happened to the medical doctors starting way back in the 70s. The medical doctors didn't think they were going to be vulnerable. Now they've been really taken over, and they're having to join hospitals just to keep their doors open. The corporates, backed by Wall Street and hedge funds, have done the same thing to dentistry. And according to the numbers I've seen by the American Dental Association, we're looking at about 90% or better of dentists are now a part of these corporate entities. And they come with a price. But at the same time, here's the side of it. The good side of it is that they're geared to the population. And most of the population has a hard time coming up with a fee for a crown, for instance. They have a hard time coming up for full periodontal work, cleaning and scaling and root planing and so on. So they serve a real purpose in getting people like yourself into these offices and getting taken care of. A person doesn't have any knowledge of the quality delivered, because you can only know that if you go to a dental school. And so if you find somebody who's a friend, like you mentioned, who's working in that entity and he likes it, and you know if he's a friend, he's going to take good care of you. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Do you follow my line of reasoning?
Sure. Yes, sir.
So, you know, as I look around, I'm pretty observant. I look around and I see a lot of people. And, of course, we have a very, very wonderful practice. But people do not take care of their teeth as well as they should. And along the line of what you mentioned, your teeth are designed to last you. I was going to talk about this later, but since you brought it up, I'll talk about it now because it's a great point. Your teeth are designed to last you 80-plus years. Now, think about that, 80-plus years. There's nothing we can do in dentistry that can match that. We can't make anything that's going to last 80-plus years. But your teeth are designed to last 80-plus years. That's just phenomenal. And the teeth are the only structures in your body that can't repair themselves. They don't remanufacture anything. And they have a nerve and a blood vessel system inside of the tooth, and that is designed to last you 80-plus years as well. Now, I have a lot of patients that are in their 80s, quite a few in their 90s. I have a few that are in their 100s, and they amazingly, they have their teeth. But just want to impress upon you how important it is to see a dentist on a regular basis, because they can pick up things when they're real small, and you can get the defect, the decay, or the fracture, or so on, taken care of long before it gets to be a problem. When you break the tooth, you lose the nerve, you have to have a root canal, you have to have an extraction, you have to have an implant or a bridge or the different replacements. All that can be prevented. Your teeth can last you. So there's no advantage in procrastinating and putting something off, and the price that you pay is pretty small compared to the big waiting till something happens to where you break a tooth. So it's so valuable for you, since you're a young person, to make sure that that tooth lasts you all of your life. And you want to stay away from sugar as much as possible. And therein lies another problem. Soda waters are a disaster. And these Gatorade drinks, these sports drinks, they are a disaster. So it's becoming informed. Sugar is not only as bad on your teeth, it's setting up for diabetes, and not only that, it's setting up for heart disease. So these are some things that you want to take advice, and remember, your mother was right.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
You
have a good rest of the day.
You bet. Thank you. All right. Call anytime. Bye-bye. Be happy to talk to you. Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Arnold, how are you today?
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering how you approach occlusion, problems that people have with occlusion.
Well, go ahead.
Mine is actually the result of something that was done by a dentist once. So
okay.
This person delivered a crown that was short.
Okay.
And set about to remedy it by dressing down the height of my other teeth.
All right.
And we proceeded a little ways, and she was talking about, what do you call it, equilibration?
Uh-huh, yes.
Of course, what she was doing was really damage, and I was trusting this person because
sure.
Previously she had done a beautiful job.
Okay.
A different crown, different situation. This case, it was destructive, and we just called it a truce, and I left. Anyway,
okay. All right.
That's one story, but the end result was I had a problem. I lost a lot of definition on molars.
Okay.
I'm 74 now, but this happened maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it hurt at first. And I was trying to figure out what to do exactly. I couldn't go back to the problem for a solution, really.
It hurt because you would chew, or it hurt to heat or cold, or what?
It just simply hurt because my occlusion, I had lost my home base.
I see.
The way your teeth come to rest.
Yes, way, yes.
With the upper ones and the lower ones.
Yes, sir.
It was just a resting position.
Okay.
And I had lost it, and I'm just wandering around.
All right.
And so I began to take papers. I smoked at the time, and
okay.
I took these cigarette papers, which are very fine paper that has watermark.
Yes.
Anyway, I took some of these papers. They were very fine. And it would pack down really tight into a hard substance. And I'd put them in the teeth, and it actually used it to build up the height. And it, little by little, I came up with an idea of where the key positions were, where I could regain my... Because I didn't really know what to do.
Sure.
Go to a dentist and just say, you know, help me. We're going to get into a long-term thing.
Yes.
And I simply wanted to recover, because each night, say after a day, by around 9 o'clock at night, my lower jaw, I'd be losing control of it. It would just be wandering forward, like a what would you call it, an underbite or overbite or.
All right. Now, how many teeth are? Do you have a full complement of teeth? Are you missing several teeth, or what? What is your situation?
Oh, prior to that, I was missing a couple of molars, but that didn't really cause this problem at all.
I see.
It was completely prior and external to this.
Okay.
This was just I lost the locking features.
The shape of it, yeah.
The shape of molars that guide one another into
right.
a resting position.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I had that resting position. I just took it for granted, like everybody does.
Uh-huh.
And within a couple of hours, I'd lost it.
Okay.
And... But at night, I could see that my jaw muscles were starting to cramp and ache.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I thought, well, I have to do something. So using my little method I described with the papers that would pack, you know, when I put a particular recesses and certain molars, and I would just build up the paper till I got to a very relaxed situation.
Okay.
And I went to two different dentists, had each one do a molar. And it was kind of odd because I didn't know if they would do this.
All right.
So I went in and I told one prosthodontist.
Uh-huh.
I thought, well, I'll go to somebody who charges too much, but probably can do this if you will do it. And I told him what I wanted. I said, I'm trying to regain the locking of my upper and lower jaw so
right.
I can relax.
Okay.
The muscles can relax. Anyway, he did it, and it worked perfectly.
How did he do it? Did he make a crown?
He created a crown.
Yes. Okay.
He actually did a temporary.
All right.
And then he did the what would be in a 1 day crown, but he did it in two sections.
Right. The prosthodontists they are the ones who handle the difficult cases like what you're describing. So go ahead.
Well, I waited about 8 months to let my mouth sort of get used to the situation or see how it was going to work. It worked all right. And then I could see the next best step would be to improve on this.
Okay.
Because it was still a little bit of slop in there. And I could see where the improvement would be. So I found another fellow, this time just a general dentist that I just had a hunch that he was good.
Okay.
So I went to him and I asked him again, same story. I said, would you do this? And I showed him specifically what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him about my crazy little idea with the papers. It wasn't an idea, it was just something that works. And it's like, you know, they have that white caulk that you can put in the mouth.
Yes.
And they close their teeth together and pull it out in a few minutes. But before you pull it out of the mouth, the person has the feeling of excellent occlusion.
Sure.
And then you pull it out, of course, and they go back to where they were. Okay. I was getting that feeling with the paper. This other guy, the second dentist, he did again a second crown, and it worked perfectly.
Okay.
Okay, that was years ago. Your mouth changes, I don't know, over time.
Yes, it does.
And so I went back to this second general dentist, and I said, I can see that my occlusion is changing, and before it gets to be a problem, I mean, I can feel the direction of it, before it gets to be a problem, would you be willing to try, and I showed him again what I thought would be the next good thing, and I wanted his opinion on it. And so he put some papers in there and did this little slide, you know, slide down, and he'd get the little slide marks on my teeth, and he said, nope.
Right.
He said he wasn't going to do it anymore. He said because he thought he would get himself into a can of worms situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so he told me to go to a TMJ guy. I'm making this. Is this too long?
All right. All right.
No, this. What I'm telling you, I'm wasting too much time with this.
Well, I've already got an answer for you.
All right. Anyway, I went to a TMJ guy. On his recommendation, I did not want to go to TMJ anyway. And what he proposed, well, you know what they do, probably.
Yes.
What he proposed was to, you know, mechanically resituate my jaws with these little appliances.
Correct.
And then when you get through with that program, then you go to a dentist and have him, what would you say, imitate that fit with new crowns.
Correct.
I could see I would be getting into something I would never finish.
Sure.
I dropped it.
Okay.
I just wanted your thought on how you would
All right. approach it. Here's what you're up against. First of all, the brain is in charge of survival. it dedicates, we're told by neurologists, that 50% of the brain is dedicated to the mouth, the muscles, the teeth, the bone, all supporting, like, from the eyes on down to the chin. 50% of the brain, if that's true, whether even if it's not true, we do know that the brain is being in charge of survival. It's very, very protective of the mouth and the whole structure of the chewing system. Because if you're not chewing right, you're not getting the sustenance you need. It's disturbing your nutrition, and the brain causes muscles to move in a way to grind out interferences, so that we call them, or so on. So the brain, this is one thing that you're fighting in answer to your question about occlusion. The occlusion has to be for like a fine set of gears to really make it work and to have it work for a lifetime. Like I described before, your teeth are designed to last you 84 plus years. So if that occlusion, if there are interferences, the brain will move the jaw and the teeth in such a way to grind out, it sends a message to the muscles to grind out any interferences, and that's some of the things that you feel. Now, if you have, the other thing is that your teeth are designed to be balanced between one and another. And if you're missing teeth anywhere in the front, the side, the back, the teeth are going, all of your teeth are going to shift into whatever space is available. The mouth is designed to have 32 teeth. You usually get four of them out in wisdom teeth, so that you wind up with 28 teeth, and it's designed, and your brain is designed to function with 28 teeth and keep everything closed together. That is, your bone is moving your teeth forward and together. And if there's space anywhere that it shouldn't be, it grows, like you're talking about, into those spaces. So when you're missing teeth, that's a problem. The brain registers on that, and the teeth move, and so this is where you get into really difficult, long-term difficulty. So back to your question, occlusion is a very fine-tuned thing. It's like a fine set of gears when everything's working right. Now, you can get along without having ideal occlusion. This is a situation, and most people get along and don't have fine occlusion. But that's what your mouth and teeth and the bone housing the teeth is designed and is engineered to do. So whenever that design is interfered with, then you're going to get into problems, and then you're going to have long-term problems like what you're talking about, unless you go to a complete overhaul where you get everything into fine alignment, like when your teeth came in, if they were ideal when you were 12 years old, and so on. So this is a short version of what happens with occlusion and why you get into these difficulties and why some people are successful handling that and some people are not. The prosthodontists have extra training in this, and they are the most skilled in straightening these things out, and they do a wonderful job. And of course, general dentists who study this and study occlusion do this very wonderful jobs as well. But in answer to your question, everything's a matter of balance and in harmony with the brain. If it's not, you're going to have problems like what you described. So that's in a short term, short answer, that's where you're at. Does that answer your question?
A little bit. I'm wondering more personally how you handle it in your practice.
Well, you do a diagnosis first. We take models, and then we take a look and put this on a what we call a articulator, which is a simulator of the mouth, and then we see what's out of whack, what's in a problem, and then if we're going to we're going to change the entire occlusion, then we do this in a wax up. We do it all in on models first, so we know exactly what's going to the end design is going to look like, and then it's segmented into segments as to how it's going to be done. That is, some people get it done all at one time. That is, do all the upper teeth at one time, all the lower teeth at one time. Some people do it segmentally. If it can be done that way, it can't always be done that way, but just doing a quadrant of a time or a few teeth at a time. If you're going to change the height of the teeth, you can't do that singly. You have to do everything at one time. But the first thing, in answer to your question, the first thing is getting a diagnosis and finding out what you're up against, what's causing your discomfort.
It's actually a very simple. There are certain areas where there's wear on one surface, and
that's exactly right.
Certain features worn down on one side.
Your teeth will wear unnecessarily because of this being out of balance, like I was talking about, where the brain does that. The brain recognizes that there's something not in alignment, so it starts directing the muscles to grind that alignment, misalignment out of place, and then that starts. Now, there's another problem with wear of teeth, and that happens to be with the sleep disordered breathing, where you may be having holding your breath at night. It causes unusual wear on your teeth, especially long term. There are other things that cause wear like that. It just may be a matter of genetics, the way your jaw was designed from your parents, grandparents, great grandparents, goes on way back. You get one genetic tooth and set of teeth trying to match up with another set of genetic teeth, and so you have a mismanagement of the way the shape of the jaw and the way the shape of the teeth are, just from a genetic standpoint. That's another factor that goes in there. And then trying to correct that is something that requires tooth movement and or requires moving, regenerating the shape of the teeth and things of that type. So in answer to your question, there are a lot of factors that go into figuring out, but the first thing is finding out what the problem is, what it is that you want to have happen, and long-term, what do you want to do about a problem like that? So that's where it's at.
Well, I can tell you it might not be the ideal thing to do,
mm-hmm.
but if I myself had some kind of non-toxic adhesive, kind of like an epoxy. It was totally inert, non-toxic.
There is nothing like that.
I know.
That will hold up. It'll all wear out or flake off.
In other words, that I could just simply...
No, we don't have anything like that. Anything that
gap.
Anything that does that is toxic, like epoxy.
You do, what do they call them, veneers?
Veneers are...
They're not subject to pressure, though, are they? They can't.
Veneers are porcelain, very thin pieces of porcelain, and they are more cosmetic than they are functional.
Yeah.
And so now we have wonderful porcelains that are non-breakable, and we have great adhesives, and we can do a lot of things that we couldn't even do 10 years ago because the materials that they've given us have been so they're so sensational. But veneers are more of a cosmetic feature.
Yeah, but can you build up a surface that way? The pressure would cause the ceramic...
Well, you can. If you build up a surface, it's got to be in harmony with your other teeth. You can't put one tooth and stick it up like a can or a post that's in the way. You can't do that because you've got to have everything in harmony to chew. You can't just build one tooth up and have it in the way. That does not work. All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Sure.
And I hope I answered your question there. Okay. Bye-bye. Let's go to Amy. Amy, how are you? Amy?
Hello?
Hi. How are you? I'm Dr. Staffel. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
2 weeks ago Tuesday, my dentist prepared my upper teeth to cap them.
Okay.
I have temporary caps on them. But apparently one of the injections on one side of my tooth, I don't know what happened, but my whole face swelled up so big I could hardly see. And so he prescribed me amoxicillin.
All right.
And so it was going down, but still it wasn't. And so Thursday I started taking K-Flex.
All right.
And I could feel that. I think there's must have been an abscess, and it was.
Yes.
K-Flex helped it to start draining.
Okay.
I was wondering, is it really going to get better like that, or do I need to do more things?
Well, anytime you have swelling, there's two reasons for swelling. One, it can be a rupture of a blood vessel if you have a bleeding problem and bleed real easy.
No, I didn't bleed at all.
Okay. Then the next thing, you can get a cellulitis, which is a reaction to the work. That is where your mouth is stretched, and we have all those instruments and mirrors and so on in your mouth and suction devices, and all that tissue agitation can cause the tissue to swell, and we call it cellulitis, and it can swell up just like what you're talking about. The third thing is that you could have had so much decay in the tooth that the nerve was already infected, and then you put the dentist put a cover on top of it and closed off a draining aspect of it, so the drain of the bacteria didn't have any place to go if it's already decayed real badly, and so it just goes the only place it can, which is into the bone and into the tissue, and that's where your antibiotic comes into play, and that's the K-Flex. If it was cellulitis, you would know. Now,
it hurt where the injection went. He injected both sides because but only one side still hurts.
Okay.
And it hurts way up there almost to my nose.
Now, in answer to your question, if it is from infection, then you're going to need to have that nerve inside that tooth removed via a root canal procedure. And you'd want to get that done before the permanent crown is seated in there. So those are the reasons that you would have a swelling like that.
Even if it feels like it's the swelling's where he injected it, it's not even on my tooth, it's up there where he put the injection.
Well, then it could be a damage to a vessel, and it had a damage to the muscle attachment up there, but that should go away pretty easily with heat, particularly, or cold. A cold pack should take that down just right away, and as well as the pain. Now, you typically will know if the tooth's nerve is infected because when you try to eat on the tooth or tap it with a handle of a knife or something very gently, it would hurt.
It doesn't. Okay. It doesn't hurt at all. My tooth doesn't. It's just up there where it was injected, way up by my nose.
Then that sounds like you probably had a cellulitis reaction to the anesthetic, which is a good thing.
So will that get better with K-Flex? Because I've been taking it since Thursday.
Yes.
I can feel it drain right away, but still it's real swelled up.
Well, go ahead and try the cold pack since about 15 minutes on and 15 minutes off and see how that helps.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You bet. Thank you for calling. Okay. Now then, the reason I was asking if anybody was interested in basic life support and having a course available for that is because in studying for the advanced cardiac life support, which we do, the cardiac doctors inform us that out of 100 cardiac and arrest cases, out of 100 cardiac arrest, there are 34 that are going to die before anybody gets to them. 14 are going to go to the hospital, and then they're going to die in the hospital. 2 are going to go to the hospital, get out of the hospital, and die after the hospital. So that totals up to 50% of cardiac arrests. 50% of them are going to die. And so in the advanced cardiac life support, which can happen anywhere, there are certain things you can do. And knowing your basic life support is so valuable, or just having a little kit of things that are helpful to carry with you in the case of advanced cardiac life or cardiac arrest. And we can help you with those, design those kits. Well, it's like an aspirin, like Benadryl, an EpiPen. Things of that type are so very, very helpful. And they can, you can get these things assembled, and it can help with an acute coronary problem and save possibly your life or someone else's life. So I just wanted to know if there's any interest in doing something like that. Now, wanted to mention there's a couple of things about antidepressants, and the antidepressants are the second most prescribed drug in the world. And it's been linked now to tooth implant failure. The numbers are rather prominent. So this is another reason for considering or being aware that antidepressants are really not long-term drugs. They're designed for short-term, for a matter of months. They're not designed for years, even though people take them for years. Be aware that if you have a dental implant, you really need to check that carefully, because there is data that is linking antidepressants to tooth implant failure. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention to you is that our dental office, the office of Dr. Staffel and McLinn, we have the most exceptional comfort system available anywhere. And we focus on, as I described, saving your teeth for 80 plus years and keeping it alive, and doing that by careful examination through our, we have cold lasers, for instance, that can see into the tooth. We have near-infrared sensors that can see inside the tooth. We have digital x-rays. We have intraoral pictures. Now, digital x-rays, for instance, will blow up a x-ray image by an 8 inch by 9 inch size, to where we can see things that are quite incredible as far as what's going on in a tooth. And then we can do the same thing with the intraoral picture. The intraoral picture is where we take a camera, a small wand, shaped like a small wand, and take a picture of a tooth from different angles, which shows fractures and breaking down fillings and cavities. And the intraoral picture, we can blow that up to the same 8 by 9 size and see amazing, just amazing detail. Then we have a cold laser that can take and see inside a tooth things that we can't see. So the point is, we have all this tremendous technology where we can make a determination about what's going on a tooth and fix teeth long before they become apparent. And that's why coming in on a regular basis and to see us, Dr. Staffel and McLinn, the number is 210-341-2569, 210-341-2569. Coming in on a regular basis and letting us use this fabulous technology and uncover these problems, and then you can take care of them at your convenience. And the great thing is, by staying way ahead of the damage, you can keep your teeth for 80 plus years. And that's really something. And along that line, there is an article that I want to bring to your attention. And I talked about it last week, and I want to talk about it again because it's so terribly important. I see in my demographic of my patients, I see patients who have, they've been patients for a long, long time. And I've watched them get into their senior years, and one of the things we see is they're losing their balance. They get into, they're falling and breaking bones. They're coming in and having to use canes and walkers and wheelchairs. And an interesting thing that I read about this last week, and I want to bring it to everybody's attention because I think it's so terribly important. It was from the Japan News. And in December of last year, there was a very large meeting of the Japan Geriatric Society, and it had its first ever nutrition workshop for doctors in Tokyo on December 17th and 18th. And it was a packed two-day affair, including case study examples, and the discussions were lively. And essentially what it said, that globally the philosophy for elder health maintenance has been leaning toward good nutrition rather than medicine. And I think everybody can identify with that from what you see and what you hear. But for example, elderly people with kidney diseases should not drastically restrict their protein intake unless their condition is severe, as limiting their protein consumption in the same way as a younger person may result in a loss of muscle mass even before the kidney deteriorates. This would lead them to need nursing care. And that's the whole point of what they found out, is that people need, especially as they get elderly, especially as they get 75 or older, they need to keep from getting into geriatric nursing care. Frailty has been given as a reason for over 50% of the people 75 or older. Now, this is in Japan, who has some of the longest live people on the planet. So frailty was given as a reason for over 50% of these people age 75 or older needing geriatric nursing care, and this surpassed lifestyle diseases such as strokes, which were at 30%. And the key thing that they want people to do is to eat meat, so that they don't become malnourished, because that causes more harm than good. So to avoid frailty, they mentioned that it's necessary to consume the required amount of protein needed to preserve muscle mass. When you age, your muscles turn to fat. Even if your weight stays the same, your ability to synthesize protein effectively also diminishes. Now, the best proteins are animal proteins such as meat, lean meat, fish, and dairy products. Doing muscular strength training in conjunction with proper protein intake can help increase the muscle mass and muscle strength, even for the elderly. And it's also necessary to consciously eat vegetables, as the intake of vitamins and minerals becomes even more important as we grow older. Now, here is a really strong key point. Getting sufficient dental care to allow you to eat for as long as possible is also key. Now, what that means is, if you have dentures and you can't eat with dentures, you need to get dental implants in place. If you have missing teeth, you need to get those missing teeth repaired and replaced. If you have broken teeth, you need to get those fixed. If you have infected teeth, you need to get those infections treated, either removed. The infected teeth are treated with good root canal procedures. So this is probably something you've never heard before, except last week. And essentially what it is, to stay out of a geriatric nursing home and keep from getting frail, especially after the age of 75, you want to be sure and eat meat, lean meat, such as fish and dairy products and chicken. And, of course, lean meat like venison is fabulous, or buffalo, bison, is also an excellent meat. Lamb is an excellent meat. So you don't want to knocked down. Stay. You don't want to stay away from animal proteins. This is going to help keep your muscles from turning to fat. It's going to keep you from getting frail, according to these studies in Japan. And then the important along with that is getting sufficient dental care to make sure that you can eat anything that you want, any type of food that you want, in total comfort. And this is one of the reasons that we talk about getting your teeth fixed long before you're going to retire, for instance. Or if you have retired, mapping out a plan to get your teeth fixed and get your teeth where you can chew properly. It may take you 5 years to get everything in proper order so that you can eat, but it's just so important that you have good teeth so that you can chew good protein and meat. And then we'll talk more in the future about vitamins. A lot of physicians are not too keen on vitamins, and same way with medicine, but we do have more and more evidence piling up. And for instance, like in the Texas Biomed report not too long ago, studies found that patients at risk for developing an advanced form of advanced or age-related macular degeneration lowered their risk by about 25% when treated with a high-dose combination of vitamin C, vitamin E, beta-carotene, and zinc. So vitamins are becoming more and more recognized as being more valuable. And as you get older, you need vitamins more than ever. In 2007, it was brought to the public's attention by Dr. Hobick that everybody was not getting enough vitamin D. And now you go to the doctor and you're going to get a test for your vitamin D3 levels, especially your vitamin D levels, because it's a huge factor in bone health and immunity and a whole bunch of other health issues. So vitamin D is one of the things that are being promoted by physicians, and they're testing for it. They're testing for vitamin B12 as well, and taking vitamin B12 sublingually in a liquid. And now we know that boron, of all things, is a very powerful bone, driving calcium into bone. It's a mineral. It's very, very important. And of course, magnesium. We all know about magnesium and zinc. And so the point is, the news is changing. Things are changing. The data is changing. So vitamins are more important, especially as you get older. And eating meat, eating protein, but mostly lean beef, lean pork, skinless chicken, salmon, fish. These are very, very valuable protein things. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you have a great week. And remember to keep brushing your teeth, live longer. Brush your teeth and floss, live longer still. Brush your teeth, floss, and see your dentist twice a year, and you'll live longer still. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.